Hi, I'm Marie.
And I'm Emily.
And we're registered dietitians who love to look at the research when it comes to all things diets and supplements.
With years of working with professional and collegiate athletes, we've seen it all, and we're here to set the record straight.
On this podcast, we break down popular diets and supplements to let you know what's legit
and what's BS.
Welcome back to RDs versus BS podcast. We are recording on Valentine's Day. This won't come out till Monday, but happy belated Valentine's Day to all. We are celebrating by recording a podcast today on artificial sweeteners. So super excited for this episode. This is something that we've had a couple of listeners ask us about our thoughts on artificial sweeteners. So we did an episode, but then the World Health Organization last year came out with a meta-analysis and all these guidelines around artificial sweeteners that took a bit of a stronger stance than what they had in the past when it comes to who should and shouldn't be using artificial sweeteners and all of that. So we wanted to do an artificial sweetener part two, another look at those. And this is another kind of two-part episode. We also wanted to do a somewhat deep dive into electrolyte supplements, which was another listener submission. Just wanting to know, when should I use them? Which ones should I use based on what situation I'm in? You know, if you're running a marathon, if you're just an everyday kind of active person, or if you're not active at all, do you need electrolytes? So we will answer all of those questions for you. But before we get into our episode today, as many of you know, this year we started a RDs versus BS Patreon. Check out the link in our show notes or the link in our Instagram bio. Also, if you like our podcast, please be sure to subscribe, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, 5-star rating if you listen on Spotify, and keep sending us those topic suggestions. Our Instagram is rds_vs_bs_pod, or check out our contact page on our website, rdsversusbs.com. All right, let's get into it. Marie, what do you have for us for shit at the grocery store?
All right, I've got some shit that Target is selling. Not just Target, but have you ever heard of the supplement line Olly, O-L-L-Y? They have a lot of gummies.
Yeah, yes. And they're very visually appealing. Like, I'm always drawn to them. Like, I want to see what these are about.
Yeah.
So you're about to tell us what they're all about. I'm excited.
It is Olly Lovin' Libido. And no. I was like, I need to see what they put in a libido.
Oh my God.
What could they possibly?
Oysters.
No oysters. So the marketing on it is very sparkly, for sure. It says, rev things up. Traditional botanicals to help boost desire, enhances arousal, supports natural lubrication, and clinically studied ashwagandha to help support sexual satisfaction.
We did not talk about that in our ashwagandha episode. That didn't even come up.
Yeah, that's correct, because there's not actually any evidence to show that ashwagandha does anything in this realm.
Oh my gosh. Wait, this is perfect for Valentine's Day. I'm so glad
you chose this. Oh my God, it is. I don't even know. Oh, that's probably why they had it like out on display.
Uh-huh.
I'm so stupid. Okay. No, that makes sense awesome. Now. I'm just doing my thing, looking for some CeraVe red eye cream. Next thing I know, I'm getting smacked in the face with Love and Libido Loca, all these stuff.
Oh, too funny. Oh my gosh.
So anyways, yeah, I looked at the supplement facts, and barring a couple other random herbal things, the main thing in this is ashwagandha. And that's my main takeaway. It's like, we did a deep dive into ashwagandha. I have further in work taken a deeper dive into ashwagandha, because they now have a third-party tested ashwagandha product on the market. So it is very well studied, or I should say it is one of the best studied adaptogens. It is done in clinical doses and clinical trials on people, objective measures, not just subjective when it comes to stuff like stress and stress response and inflammation, all that kind of stuff. So it can be helpful for stress, for mood, for sleep, stuff like that. I guess, in turn, if you're less stressful or less stressed out. But that's a stretch. Like, there's no data on this. So, yeah. I'm so glad that you pointed out, oh, well, you probably saw it because it's Valentine's Day. It's a marketing ploy. So that's all that you need to know about that supplement is they probably really push it hard this time of year. And that's probably why I've never seen it before. But that's what I got.
I don't think I've ever seen a supplement claiming that.
I've seen super like sketchy ones claiming that.
Sure.
You know, like the testosterone ones sometimes make those claims, but I've never seen one. And that one was like pretty clearly marketed to women.
Oh my gosh. So that doesn't get your stamp of approval.
It does not.
Okay. Oh, too funny. That's a good one. Something kind of new.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Then let's get into our main topic today.
Yeah, so like Emily said, we did our episode 2 years ago, but there's been like a pretty good amount of research that's come out in the past 2 years on this topic and the World Health Organization releasing the meta-analysis that it did, and then also with its recommendations. So we figured it garnered a second look. So we're going to talk through what those guidelines are now, how they came to those conclusions, talk through kind of quickly some of the studies that they looked at. I mean, this article was like 250 pages long.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I read every single article that they cited. But there were some notable ones that I think are worth mentioning that I had heard of in the past that came out within the last year that I did take a look at. So we can kind of talk through some of those. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody that we are not particularly promoting non-nutritive sweeteners as something that you should like definitely add to your diet, and you should definitely do a Diet Coke every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But like, are they as detrimental as maybe it has seemed in the media? So for everybody thinking that we're sponsored by Coca-Cola, here I am telling you to not drink Diet Coke at breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. What are artificial sweeteners? So they're just a sugar substitute, as most of you probably know. Some common ones are ACE-K, saccharin, sucralose, stevia. There's a bunch of derivatives of stevia. So that is basically what this World Health Organization analysis was looking at, is what are some of the health outcomes related to artificial sweeteners.
The way it was, even just Googling this now to do like research, now that it's been, you know, many months since this came out, it's all the news and the media taking like single lines from this 200 whatever page paper and saying like the World Health Organization says how bad it is, and the cancer piece and all of this. And it's just not, I mean, unsurprisingly, that's not what's actually in the article, but that's what, you know, makes a good headline. This was a meta-analysis. It took into account 283 studies, which is a lot.
Again, I think the conclusions, and I don't even know if the World Health Organization really botched the conclusions so much as like the people then like you said, kind of took a sentence and ran with it. And it's like, that's not even really what it was saying, but okay. All right. So getting into some of the findings. So one of the really big things with non-nutritive sweeteners is typically they're associated with like a diet product, like a diet soda or a diet like cake, like a diet pastry product, something like that. So they're almost always there to replace a high sugar item. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, why they were created and for the longest time, you know, why people consume them and why people still consume them is to replace sugar with a non-calorie substitute that is still sweet. Because we don't necessarily see population-wide dramatic decreases in obesity when we started introducing non-nutritive sweeteners, there was then all of these ideas of, well, maybe non-nutritive sweeteners actually do make you gain weight. Maybe even if you're not drinking sugar, your body still thinks it's about to get sugar, so you're going to have an insulin response. There's all these different biomechanistic things that people have suggested that have been pretty staunchly debunked within the medical community, But because we don't see non-nutritive intake correlated with weight loss on a big scale, people are just very hell-bent on this idea of, no, there's got to be something about the artificial sweetener that causes weight gain. This is something that the article did address and did come to the conclusion of, hey, when we're talking about long-term weight loss, it's not something that we necessarily find is beneficial. But I kind of want to talk through that finding because I don't think it's as clear as non-nutritive sweeteners and artificial sweeteners directly cause weight gain. What we see in this big meta-analysis and what the World Health Organization points out is that in the long term, when you look at clinical trial data in people who drink a lot of diet products versus people who do not report drinking a lot of diet products, what we see in the long term, and this is where a lot of that retrospective data comes into play, like they ask people what their eating habits have been for the last 20 years or whatever, what they see is that the people that are obese tend to drink more diet drinks with artificial sweetener than the people who are not. So that is why the conclusion of the study is like, hey, this is clearly not an appropriate weight loss or an appropriate intervention for weight loss, just telling people to switch to diet soda, because what we're seeing is that people that have the highest consumption of diet sodas have the highest fat percentages. I don't really agree with that conclusion. I'm not disagreeing right with the data, but I don't agree with that conclusion. The reason that you're seeing people with higher fat have a higher intake of diet soda is because typically you are going to have a higher consumption of diet soda if you are trying to control calories. So if you are somebody who is within the normal, you know, fat percentage and you're not actively trying to lose fat mass, and I think that there's something to be said about diet quality as well, typically people with the highest quality of diet and the highest access to like fresh fruits and vegetables and lean proteins and stuff like that, diet soda is just not part of their day-to-day life versus somebody with poor diet quality who maybe is doing a lot of fast food, a lot of processed food. Maybe they are trying to make the switch of regular soda to diet soda, but that in itself is not enough to drive weight loss. And so just because you've got a group of people that tend to drink a diet product more doesn't mean that it's the diet product that is causing the weight gain. I think you're just looking at populations that were already obese and in an attempt to not be obese, switch to diet, but it just wasn't enough of an impact.
Yes.
What do you think?
No, that's 100% what I think as well. And so the WHO coming out and saying that replacing sugar sweeteners with non-nutritive sweeteners does not promote weight loss. Like you said, I don't really agree with like that interpretation because of exactly what you said before. It's just, you know, people who have a higher fat percentage are probably trying to do whatever they can to have less calories, and that's a way to do it. And, you know, the opposite for people who have a lower fat percentage. Totally makes sense. There is research that shows that people who replace, you know, sugar and sugar sweetened foods and beverages with artificial sweetener foods and beverages do intake lower calories. Yeah, I think that their interpretation is a little like, I don't know. I think it's a little misleading because if we are just looking at calories, yeah, you are intaking less calories. Does that always lead to weight loss? Not necessarily.
Not in the long term necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what the data is showing. It's like the clinical trials that have a very controlled place where you are giving one group a non-nutritive sweetener drink and one group a regular soda, and you compare those two groups, they drink less calories, they lose weight in the short term. But I think that what this is not capturing is like in the same way that most diets don't work.
Right, in the long term, yeah.
The thing is, like, the World Health Organization could just as easily put out a statement on diets and say, hey, we took a look and it seems like most people who are obese are the ones that have tried dieting, so dieting actually doesn't work. Well, why would you diet if you're the acceptable social size? You know what I mean? So, like, you're probably not going to be the one dieting. Mm-hmm. It's the same situation here. In the short term, switching one for one, we do see reduction in weight. Mm-hmm. We do see reduction in caloric intake. Actually, when compared to water, we actually see that people who do the non-nutritive sweetener, sweetened beverage, do better than the people who switch to water because they feel like that sweetness is getting satiated, whereas the people who just do water don't have that satiated feel, and then they wind up over-consuming on the other food that they're eating.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's short-term. And that's a short-term solution as well. And I have never been under the impression that suggesting that somebody switch from a Coke to a Diet Coke is like the end-all be-all weight loss advice.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the World Health Organization thought that somehow this would just fix everything, and like, oh, turns out we were wrong. In the same way that like no other one dietary recommendation would totally reverse obesity.
Mm-hmm.
Because obesity has not been totally reversed. We haven't figured it out. You know, we haven't figured out that sweet spot. It's the culmination of like many behaviors that will take someone from being obese to not obese and then actually stay within a normal range. I wish that the conclusion had been what the data is actually showing, which is, hey, in the short term, we see that it does lead to fewer calorie intake. However, we're still seeing that most people who rely on these are still obese. So clearly we need to look to other interventions as well.
Sure.
But, you know.
Yeah. You know, there were some other findings in this study as well, you know, beyond just this weight piece. But one piece that's kind of related to that, that I think is important, because I've heard a lot of people ask this, whether, you know, they've been told that if you do drink a Diet Coke, your body's expecting the calories, and when it doesn't get it, it becomes more hungry. So of looking at these 283 studies in the meta-analysis, they did find that there's no significant effect of non-nutritive sweeteners on hunger or satiety, like the feeling of being full. So that was kind of interesting. So they did find that, but I think
I want to go one step further with that, because yes, we have 200 plus studies, not all of them looked at that, but we've a meta-analysis finally put in the kibosh on that. And I want to bring up one specific randomized control trial that had continuous monitoring of insulin response on people that were on four different non-nutritive sweeteners, on people that were on a placebo sugar, and on people that were on nothing. There was zero insulin response for people that were on the non-nutritive sweetener. So, like, can we put that to bed?
Yes. So, yeah, beyond hunger, satiety, weight, all of that, there were some other findings that I think scared people even more when the WHO came out and said the results and then gave their interpretation of this. So, observational cohort studies, so it's a very specific type of study, they found that long-term use of non-nutritive sweetener beverages was associated with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and early death in adults. How are you going to put that out there and expect the population to just take that and be like, okay, we're going to think critically about this? Like, no, that's a very scary line. And if you just take it for what it says, the articles write themselves. Like, that is scary. But there's more to it than just drinking artificial sweetener, like Diet Coke, causes cardiovascular disease and early death. Do you want to explain why, Marie? I feel like you're good at this.
Well, it's the exact same reason as why we see it more intake in obese people than non-obese. It just comes down to, and again, if you're somebody who like drinks diet sodas regularly, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about generally speaking. Generally speaking, people that have high consumption of diet products tend to be more obese and are choosing diet as a way to control calories and tend to have poorer diet quality overall. What else do we see when people have poor diet quality overall? We tend to see lower rates of exercise. lower income. Like all these things, all these health behaviors are associated with each other. So there's a huge difference between somebody with a very poor diet quality, somebody who maybe can't afford a whole lot of like fresh fruits and vegetables and are having to rely more on these convenience food, is often choosing a diet soda, lives a sedentary lifestyle, maybe has to work two jobs to keep up with the finances, doesn't have time to carve out time for exercise, whatever it is. Add stress on top of that scenario that I just gave you. That's a very real person. That's a lot of people that we see, and they tend to be obese. And the stress, the obesity, the lack of ability to exercise, the sedentary lifestyle, the poor food quality, all of these things roll into their health outcomes. Again, it's just, what do we tend to see with people that are drinking lots of diet soda? On the other hand, what do we tend to see with people who purposefully avoid diet sodas? We see people that are health conscious, so they're probably doing other things that are health promoting. We see people who maybe are wanting to think about what are the ingredients in the foods that they're eating. So again, more health conscious, better, more health promoting behaviors. You can't, and nor does the World Health Organization say that it is causing cardiovascular disease, that it's causing obesity. They make the same statement about diabetes later. It's not causing any of these things. They're associated with these things. We see higher consumption in populations, but I feel like we would say the same thing about smoking, about consumption of processed red meat, about consumption of potato chips. You know, people don't typically choose like super good health behaviors in one category and super bad health behaviors in another category. You're either like generally health promoting or generally that's not a priority for you. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's what the data is reflecting here.
Definitely. Definitely. And what's interesting is the study also found that higher intake of non-nutritive sweetener, either in beverages or added to food, was associated with an increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Now, this one, I just feel like this shows even more this kind of reverse causation bias, because mm-hmm. I think specifically with artificial sweet, like diet foods, like diet candy and pastries and cakes and stuff, typically, I don't know, I feel like people who don't have diabetes or pre-diabetes typically don't go for those, where I know, you know, plenty of people drink Diet Coke, whether you have diabetes or not. And I'm, you know, this isn't like a rule, but I find that, you know, in my many clients I've had who have and have not had diabetes, the ones with diabetes are much more likely to want to go towards these artificially sweetened foods. So it's the same thing is happening here with this finding, is that people who have type 2 diabetes are the ones who are drinking Diet Coke or diet anything. Gosh, maybe people do think we're going to be sponsored by Coke. I keep saying Diet Coke. It's any diet soda, any diet drink, and eating the sugar-free foods that taste sweet. They're sweetened with non-nutritive sweeteners. So yeah, it's the same for both of those. So that's important to note. One thing I really did like out of this meta-analysis was that no association was found with intakes of non-nutritive sweetener and cancer or cancer death. So despite this, you know, reverse causation of, you know, these type of people are the ones who typically eat non-nutritive sweeteners, they didn't find any association here, which again, like, yes, can we just put this one to bed too? Like, I've heard it's just been... And we talk about it in our first episode on artificial sweeteners too, and the cancer and all of that. There were some research like studies in the past in animal studies that seemed to correlate specifically saccharin and cancer, but those have since been, you know, it's in animal studies, and also further studies on saccharin have found that, you know, the mechanism that turned saccharin into tumors in the rats is not applicable to humans. So that is one thing that I'm glad came out of this.
So one thing that the World Health Organization also did last year that had a lot of people talking, and this is related to cancer, is they classified artificial sweeteners as a group 2B carcinogen. So of course, everybody heard that, got their hands on it. Now it's a whole thing of, oh, you need to avoid artificial sweeteners. You need to avoid aspartame particularly because it's an increased cancer risk, right? So I just want to talk about what that classification means. So a group 2B carcinogen is a substance that is shown to cause cancer in rodents, but there is little to no data in humans. So what that means, and we talked about this in our previous episode about artificial sweeteners, that yes, when you induce rodents with just an asinine amount of artificial sweetener and aspartame in particular, that they develop cancer. Okay, humans never will expose themselves to the amount of aspartame that they expose those rodents in those studies. We talked about this in our last episode about a year ago. Also, what that classification means is there is little to no evidence in human data. Well, now we have this huge meta-analysis that looks at what are the health outcomes in humans for people that have significantly higher intake of artificial sweetener versus people who don't. And we see higher rates of obesity, we see higher rates of cardiovascular disease, we see higher rates of type 2 diabetes. We've explained why we think those happen, but we don't see, and the study concludes that there is no increased risk in humans for cancer. What that tells me is that the mechanisms that we're seeing in these rodents are not appearing in humans, because if the link between artificial sweetener and cancer was as strong as like everybody claims it to be, we would have seen more instances of cancer, particularly colon cancer, in the people that were drinking more artificial sweetener or consuming more artificial sweetener than in the people that weren't. We see absolutely no data that supports this in the human research. So the reason that it was classified is because we do now have the data to show that, yes, we have seen it in animal studies, but no, we do not see this in human trials and in human observational studies. When we look at populations, looking at who drinks artificial sweetener, who doesn't, do they have higher increased risk? No, they do not. So the human data is abundantly clear. We would see significantly higher rates of cancer in people that say that they consume more artificial sweetener if there was actually that elevated risk, but we just don't see that. And if you're still concerned, I want to throw out some other things that are also group 2B carcinogens. And if you're not worried about these things, then there's no reason to be worried about aspartame. So, aloe vera. Are you guys worried about aloe vera giving you cancer? Probably not. So you probably don't need to be worried about aspartame. Another one that I see influencers promoting who are also promoting against the intake of aspartame for the reason that it may cause cancer. I'm doing in air quotes. Kava. So again, if you're not worried about kava, you don't need to be worried about aspartame. And then the last one that I saw, there's a bunch of stuff that are in this classification, but I'm just pulling out some of the ones that are more popularly known. Being a hairdresser. So if you're not worried about your hairdresser getting cancer, then you probably don't need to worry about artificial sweeteners giving you cancer. And again, this is not me promoting the intake of aspartame or the intake of artificial sweeteners if that's not something that's part of your diet, but I'm just saying this demonization of aspartame and artificial sweeteners in the name of protecting people from cancer is really not validated by the literature at all. If anything, we pretty clearly show that, yes, while it's associated with other chronic diseases, it is in no way associated with cancer at all.
100%. I'm glad you brought that piece up as well. So when, you know, this isn't like a typical BS stamp or not kind of topic, but what I take away from all of this is, you know, yes, based on all of these findings, the WHO advised against using non-nutritive sweetener to control body weight or to reduce the risk of non-communicable diseases. Like, that was their finding. I would argue that you know, my takeaway from this is pretty much what Marie said at the very beginning, is we're not going to be here saying everyone should drink diet soda and eat the diet sugar-free foods, right? It's still processed. I mean, the things that the WHO did find, like using it as associated with increased cardiovascular disease and early death and developing type 2 diabetes, you don't have to worry about that. Like, I wouldn't take those findings and say, now no one should ever drink a diet soda or eat a sugar-free candy. Mm-hmm. It's a moderation thing.
And I do think that there are instances in which advising somebody to switch from a sugar-sweetened beverage to a non-nutritive beverage probably is a short-term solution, right? Of like, hey, let's see if we can transition you away from drinking so much sugar-sweetened beverage. Start with, okay, let's switch to maybe some diet drinks, some like, you know, those Mio spritz, like all those things are the artificial sweetener thing. Okay, well, then maybe we can transition you to seltzer water and mineral water and regular water. And naysayers of dietitians think that we're out here being like, oh, I'll just switch from Coke to Diet Coke. And like, well, that might be a step for a lot of people, but that's not your end goal, is to just now start drinking a bunch of Diet Coke. Your end goal is to let's influence health behavior change to the point where you're now drinking primarily water, primarily seltzer water, sparkling water, whatever it is that like satiates that thirst that you were getting from the Coke to begin with. And I think for a lot of people in the short term, significantly reducing their sugar intake by switching to a non-nutritive sweetener, again, to satiate that sugary craving, is a good short-term solution as we are building better behavior habits. So I think this whole idea of like, don't even try it. Well, I mean, don't have that be your only intervention, right? Like, obviously, that's not going to work. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts.
Yeah. So hopefully that gave everyone, you know, a bit more information of where these recommendations and these findings are coming from and our thoughts on it. For now, that's what we know about artificial sweetener, and that's our recommendation, right? Like Marie said, it's not the goal to drink more Diet Coke, but if it's a stepping stone in someone's, you know, journey to health, then it's not as bad as some people or even the WHO might make it seem if you really put a critical eye to this study. Okay, so like I said earlier in this episode, this is kind of a two-parter. So I'm not going to call it a BSPS because it's a, you know, little bit bigger than some of our typical BSPS topics, but we want to talk about electrolyte supplements because we got this specific listener submission. It says, "Hi ladies, I just started listening to your podcast. I'm quickly becoming a huge fan. My question today pertains to supplementing with electrolytes in your water. I've recently come across electrolyte powder through different individuals at the gym. One of the trainers I know from there speaks very highly of it, having the electrolyte powder once a day in the morning to rehydrate your body fully with electrolytes and trace minerals, as well as providing you with more energy. What are your thoughts on this?" So when I brought this up, Marie immediately said, "I've got a huge handout, like, I got this." So this is going to be a Marie forward segment. So Marie, what do you have for us?
Oh, I talk about this all day, every day. Hydration.
And now you get to talk about it on our podcast as well.
Yes. Well, and let's also keep in mind, like, the population that I work with is Air Force ground operators. So tactical athletes wearing 100 pounds worth of kit, sweating, all conditions, all altitudes, right? So keep that in mind. And like, that's the sense in which I talk about it. So I'm going to kind of talk through like what would be appropriate if you are somebody with high activity, somebody like that, somebody that's training for something, somebody that's more of like a moderate athlete, somebody that's more of a sedentary lifestyle, all that kind of stuff. So talking specifically about like pouring electrolyte supplements. Typically with those, what they're going to highlight on there is the amount of sodium and potassium, but you do typically get other minerals as well. Sometimes you'll get magnesium, sometimes you'll get chloride, I want to just kind of talk through, you know, like the two biggest things, and this is kind of a good piggyback off of the conversation that we had about the sodium versus potassium salt substitutes that we just had a couple episodes ago. So if you are drinking an electrolyte drink, if it's a good one, and we'll get to that in a second, it's going to contain like kind of a shit ton of sodium. There are some situations where that is super appropriate, and there are some situations where that's super not appropriate. Some of them also contain a shit ton of sugar. Some of them have artificial sweeteners. Wow, what a good piggyback.
It all ties together.
Yeah. And sometimes that added sugar is a good thing. You want that in your electrolyte mix. And sometimes you might opt for one that is either artificially sweetened or, I mean, sometimes they have them that are sweetened with like maltodextrin and stuff like that. But all right. So when in general would an electrolyte supplement be appropriate? If you are an athlete or a highly active individual, if you are a heavy sweater and or you live in a hot and humid climate and you notice that you are sweating a lot, and if you live at high altitude or any combination of those three things, that's when these would be appropriate. If you are, and when I say athlete, you don't have to be like a professional athlete. I mean, if you are somebody that engages in physical activity. If you have a more sedentary lifestyle, you're not a particularly heavy sweater, if most days you're not working out, you might not need these. And you certainly wouldn't need them kind of outside of any physical activity or going outside and it's hot out and you start sweating a lot. So a lot of times when I see people drinking a Gatorade at their desk in an air-conditioned room and they're not planning on doing activity anytime soon, That's not an appropriate time to be drinking. You don't need sodium in that instance. You don't need the sugar in that instance. I will say, and perfect, we did not really plan this, but perfect getting back to the conversation we just had. There are a lot, actually, of low-calorie electrolyte mixes on the market. And that actually could, and their flavor typically, right? Like lemonade flavor, Blue Blast flavor, whatever. This could help with calorie control. If you don't like to drink water, I don't necessarily recommend drinking these all day, every day because of the sodium content, especially if you are sedentary, you're not sweating a lot. But if your choices are a Coke or a, I'll just choose one, like a Propel zero calorie electrolyte mix, I would choose the Propel. I think that's more appropriate. Now, I don't want you drinking a bunch of them throughout the day and getting a bunch of unnecessary sodium. So it is still all about moderation, but that would be an appropriate reason, in my opinion, to drink something like a low, no calorie electrolyte mix if you are trying to drink more water, drink less sugar sweetened beverages. So I have this beautiful chart that I use at work. I am going to modify it slightly, but this will be available on the Patreon if you want a visual reference, because this is basically every major product and how much sodium it contains per 16.9 ounces, which is like a typical water bottle size, and how many carbs it contains per 16.9 ounces, and when it would be most appropriate to drink this product. So I have, I don't know, looks like 20-ish different brands. So like I said,
it's so good, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
So helpful.
Like I said, patreon.com/Arties vs. BS podcast. You can go ahead and download this. But, you know, just I'm going to point out a couple. So I gave the Propel examples. Another example would be that's popular is the Noon Sports Tablets. Contains sodium, a little bit of potassium, 4 total carbs. So, I mean, basically none. Another really popular one that I've seen on the market lately is Liquid IV. So here is, you know, not a whole lot of carbs, but we're starting to get into a lot of sodium here. Per sleeve, it's 500 grams of sodium. If you guys remember, the total daily recommendation is just over 2,000. So if you're not sweating out at least 500 milligrams of salt, which if you are an athlete, you are absolutely doing. But if you're not doing that, if you're not having an active day, if you're not sweating a lot, that's a quarter of your salt intake in one electrolyte sleeve. So probably not appropriate unless you're really not planning on eating like any other salt throughout the day. Then we get to stuff like regular Gatorade. So regular Gatorade is one of your sugariest beverages. They don't do this because they want to promote bad health or whatever else you want to claim about big companies and like Gatorade. No, they do it. They make it for athletes. They make it for athletes. You need sugar when you're an athlete. If you are doing some sort of endurance exercise, if you are about to participate in an athletic event, if you have anything lasting longer than an hour, you need something like Gatorade that's going to have sodium, a little bit of potassium, not a lot, and a pretty good amount of sugar in it that's going to give you that immediate energy. So that's what that would be for. Gatorade, again, not appropriate for just sitting at your desk in an air-conditioned building when you don't need the sugar and the salts. All right, second to last thing, we have our super sodium electrolyte solutions. So this person that wrote in said that she was hearing about these things from her gym. It's possible she might or others might come across some of these super sodium solutions. A popular one is called Element, L-M-N-T. That is definitely in the sports world right now and the fitness world. This has 1,000 milligrams of sodium per sleeve. So if you are really sweating hard, if you're like me, you're in Florida, it's middle of summer, and you're going on an hour run, yeah, you might want to take that like a little bit before or and or after your run, because you're going to be sweating a lot. You're going to be losing a lot of salt in that sweat. But if you're just sitting at your desk and you did like a 30-minute walk and it was cool out and you didn't really sweat, you're eating half of your sodium needs in one sleeve of electrolyte mix. So just pay attention to how much sodium is in the actual electrolyte mix and be realistic and reasonable about the amount of sweat output that you're having. Very last thing I want to touch on is the potassium or the coconut water-based drinks. So the two hot ticket items on the market right now are Body Armor and Prime. Let me just say, as a sports drink, I hate these. These are so subpar. They're so inferior. I wish they would go away. They are terrible for my population, for athletes. Don't do it.
But the marketing goes right to them.
Yes. And it's so annoying. So annoying. However, these things and why they're subpar is they are high potassium, low sodium. These two might actually be more appropriate for your sitting at your desk and wanting something other than water scenario than some of the other stuff, because you're going to have a lot less sodium with these. I categorize these, and when I teach about these, I call them, quote, lifestyle drinks. But if that's what you're wanting an electrolyte drink for, is something that's not water, something that tastes good, something that has a fun flavor, that is like, these would be very appropriate for this situation. So I would definitely advocate for Body Armor or Prime in times when you're not sweating, you're not active, you're just sedentary and kind of wanting something sweet to taste. So that is my breakdown. Questions, Emily?
So good. So helpful. I'm having so much fun looking at this handout. A question a lot of people have, and our listener had. Well, I guess our listener was specifically like before a workout, should mm-hmm. they have electrolytes? Like, yeah, if you're working out, if you're doing something and you're sweating, electrolytes could help. I think they mentioned one of their trainers recommends electrolytes to rehydrate your body fully and to get trace minerals and to provide you with more energy. I will say, if there's no carbs in your electrolyte drink, your body is not being provided with energy. Like, electrolytes and trace minerals do not equal energy. Mm-hmm. Carbs equal energy. Caffeine equals mental focus, like you feel alert, but only carbs are going to give you energy. So keep that in mind. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you, Marie, for that breakdown. I think those will be very helpful. Thank you all for being our listeners and for your great topic suggestions. We've been getting quite a few lately, so keep them coming. Check out the Patreon for this electrolyte handout and so much more. We've got stuff coming out every single week. So check that out. But until next time, I'm Emily.
And I'm Marie.
And don't let the BS get the best of you.